Welcome to the Weekly Insight Podcast, where we break down the noise of the week and help you understand the psychology of the markets with your host, Andrew Doerr at Insight Wealth Group.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Weekly Insight Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Andrew Doerr. I appreciate you making a little bit of time for us. You're going to have to forgive my cold today. I sound a little rough, but really do appreciate you being here. As always, I'll start like I do and just remind you that what you're about to hear today should not be considered individual investment advice, but instead just my thought and our firm's thoughts on what's shaping the market and the economy today. Now, we've been putting together our commentary for clients now for a little over 4 years. I think it was 2 weeks ago was our four-year anniversary. Been putting out a memo. Now, for the last 2 years, we've been putting out a podcast every week. And most of that time has been filled with drama. COVID. COVID was the reason we started this. And inflation, FOMC meetings, and war in Eastern Europe. The list goes on and on. And it seems like so much of our commentary has been about how to properly respond to crisis. That's not really the case today. We've been on a pretty great run right now. The market's recovered well from the 2022 correction. Inflation is coming under control. A recession, which of course is eventually inevitable, is really not a concern today. And as we've discussed many times here, election years actually tend to be pretty good for portfolios. Things are stacking up pretty nicely at this point. It'd be easy to take a victory lap right now, right? Things are great. Enjoy your week. That's all we got to say. These are the moments, though, when it becomes important to take a look into the future and start addressing the next risk. What is going to affect portfolios, not just this year, but for the next 10? And how do we prepare? Because some risks are unknowable. The prospects for global conflict certainly higher today than they've been at any time since the end of the Cold War. They're pretty difficult to decipher. Is China going to take advantage of this moment and move on Taiwan? If Russia is successful in Ukraine, will they move further west? Does NATO's involvement in Ukraine drive Putin to do something stupid? It's all unknowable. But the problems here at home are easier to understand. And the one we'd like to focus on today, and really encourage you to focus on, is the $34 trillion problem. It's the national debt. You know the story by now. The battle against COVID, which was more expensive than World War II on an inflation-adjusted basis, drove the national debt to levels previously unseen. But is this really a COVID problem? Isn't this just the way things have always been? Don't we always run a deficit? Nope. Now, I do this sometimes, and I'm going to do it a lot today. There's some really great charts in our Weekly Insight memo, which is linked in the show notes. I'd encourage you to take a look at them. But they're from some pretty bipartisan or nonpartisan sources. And the truth is, it's just hard data, and we can look at it. And the hard data shows us that the U.S. has not run deficits like this really at any time until the early 1980s. The chart I show in the memo talks about exactly what those deficit numbers have been, and you can see that they just absolutely have exploded over the last 20 years. But some could say, hey, Andrew, you guys aren't adjusting for inflation. You're looking at the dollar amounts, and you're right. But when we look at the problem on a basis which excludes inflation, debt as a percentage of GDP, even then, we've only tipped these levels during the greatest armed conflict in human history, World War II. The truth is, other than World War II, this is a fairly new phenomenon. In fact, Washington actually worked hard during the post-war years on a bipartisan basis, despite all the military spending surrounding the Cold War, to gradually reduce our debt as a percent of GDP, getting it down to roughly 30% in 1980. That was the moment when everything changed. The Reagan administration, oh, there are those evil Republicans, paired with a Democratic Congress, I might add, started spending money at a rate not previously seen in peacetime. The pace continued until Bill Clinton, a Democrat, was elected president. Yeah, but he also had a Republican Congress, and with them, briefly balanced the budget again. When the Bush administration took control in 2000, shortly after, I might add, to have a democratically controlled Congress, the 9/11 attacks and the recession in 2000 started the flames of new budget deficits, but it was the great financial crisis that really threw gasoline on it, and no politician Republican or Democrat, has provided more than lip service to our national debt ever since. That leads to some really scary projections. I include a chart from the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, which shows their expectation for the federal debt from now until 2034. And you know what it does? Every single year it goes up from $34 trillion this year to $54 trillion in 2034. Okay, it's a problem. It's a big problem. Maybe it's too big. Maybe that's why no one really seems to be that concerned about fixing it. Is this just our fate? Are we stuck here? It doesn't have to be. But we do need to have some really hard conversations. The first is the simple realization that quote-unquote mandatory spending makes up a disproportionate amount of the federal budget. So what is mandatory spending? It's spending mandated based on a previously passed law. It is not debated each and every year. Simply put, the debates we're seeing happen in Congress really aren't impacting the budget to the level we imagine. 73% of the federal budget is happening inside mandatory spending, and it's going to happen whether we like it or not. Mandatory spending includes things like Social Security, Medicare, food stamps, welfare, highway road construction. In 2021, fully 80% of mandatory spending went to two programs, Social Security and Medicare. That means that over 58% of the federal budget in 2021 was spent on those two programs. And that number is growing rapidly. If we don't address those costs, there is no fixing our debt. So I can hear it now. I can hear the complaints probably coming from roughly half of you. All Andrew wants to do is make sure the poor suffer so we can reduce the debt. Nope, not at all. It turns out there are actually several things that could be done right now with these programs, which wouldn't impact those who need the programs, but would cut costs dramatically. For example, right now for Social Security, cost of living adjustments are determined by the Social Security Administration. If we simply were to tie those cost of living adjustments to CPI, that would save $430 billion per year. Or how about this one? We could subject earnings greater than $250,000 to the payroll tax. Payroll tax is what pays for Social Security. There is a limit to how much of your income is taxed. If we start taxing it again at $250,000, that would save $1.81 trillion per year. Or we could raise the payroll tax rate by 1%. That would save another $790 billion per year. Look at us, guys. We just saved over $3 trillion a year on three things. But these are not conversations our leaders are willing to have with us today. Raise these issues and it's the same old story. The GOP hates the poor. The Democrats always want to raise taxes. But this problem is spiraling. In our industry, in my business, man, I love the power of compounding interest. But when it comes to debt, compounding interest is a nightmare. In 2023, it's expected that the U.S. government's payment for interest was about $875 billion. By 2034, that number is expected to nearly double to $1.62 trillion. When you consider that the projections show that we'll bring in $7.5 trillion in tax receipts in 2034, interest alone will make up 22% of all the income that the federal government brings in. And the problem just gets worse from there. In the end, the government's budget is the same as your household's. You can't constantly spend more than you earn. The piper will eventually have to be paid. And the longer we put it off, the more painful it's going to be. So what am I recommending today? Do I have policy prescriptions, things we should do immediately? Not really. What I think we need to have is a real, honest, national conversation about the debt. We all need to admit that we have to set aside all of our biases on these issues and address the issues as they are today, because it's bad. Listen, we're all grown-ups. We should act like it, and we should expect our leaders to act like grown-ups as well. In the meantime, though, I'd encourage you to do one thing. Go visit the website for a group called the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. This is an interesting bipartisan group. It's headed up by Mitch Daniels, the former Republican governor of Indiana, and John Podesta, who is a longtime Democrat leader. This group is looking at the real issues surrounding the debt and how to fix it. And they have a really interesting tool, the Debt Fixer. And you can go on to the Debt Fixer. The link is in the memo so you can get to it. You go on the Debt Fixer and it allows you to adjust on different policy prescriptions. Maybe you are one who wants to stop funding the military. Okay, what will that do to the budget? Or what happens if we start means testing Social Security? You can click through and you can select these things and you can see what it does over the long term to our current national debt and the situation we're in. It's a fascinating tool, and I think it will change your perspective on the things that need to be done. Now, we have a long way to go on this issue. It does start by us having a real and honest conversation. And as such, I'd love to hear your thoughts on an issue that I think is as vital as any issue our nation faces today. So we'll leave it there this week. As always, though, I would love to talk with you about this. If you have questions or you have comments, give us a call. You can reach us here at the office at 515-273-1333, or you can always visit us on the web at www.insightwealthgroup.com. I hope you have a great week, and I look forward to touching base with you again soon. Take care.
Securities offered through Arete Wealth Management, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Arete Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment firm.